Auto Group Westbrook Auburn Studios. It's Ray Richardson on WLOB 100.5 FM.
Once in your life you find her, someone that turns your heart around, and next thing you know, you're closing down the town. Wake up and she's still with you.
This is Barry Manilow's greatest song to the 1980s. He's out touring again, by the way. I just saw the other day that tickets are like $100 a pop for the cheap seats.
Do you have tickets?
I don't know. Is he coming here?
I don't know, but I know you're a big Manilow fan.
I like Manilow. Yeah. We went. Did Mom go with us, Dee Dee? I can't remember, but Dee Dee and I went, and Manilow was fabulous and came down to the nice. He was just a great entertainer. But what, the funnest part for us, the most fun part for us, there were four women that were just a little older than me, and this was how long ago, 15 years ago? And they were handing in bras and room keys, and I'm not kidding you, right behind us, they were doing it. It was really entertaining. Really
wow.
Entertaining.
I bet he thought it was entertaining.
Yeah, because yeah. He doesn't care about some of that stuff.
Right. But, I mean, that's happened to him his whole career. The women that love him would do anything for him.
There you go.
Joe Bruno, Bill Diamond from Walk a Mile in Their Shoes, Dee Dee Richardson, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
Hey, Bill, I wanted to ask you, I thought the governor's profound comments on the problems with children dying in state care and state oversight in the state of the state address, I was really enthusiastic about how profound she was about them. What were your thoughts?
Oh, I thought, you know, they were so great that I didn't even hear them. I mean, it must have been passed by me really fast. No, I mean, when we first came in, I was just mentioning that, you know, it's incredible. 25 kids died in 23, and 24, we're on our way to that. We've got, I think, 13. And we won't get those results for six more months. But the whole idea is that was a great opportunity to say, you know, we've got kids that are dying. We're going to speak about it and try to address it this session. But she didn't say a word, and nor did the Republicans afterwards in their press conference. They didn't say a word either about it. And it was a great missed opportunity, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you know, it really comes to the point where if you're not going to mention it then, when you're talking about the funding for the next 2 years, when are you going to mention it? And these kids deserve better than that. So it's I was frustrated that the people who could make a difference didn't even seem to realize there was a problem.
What are the services at the school level that can help in some way?
Well, you know, that's another whole issue because, as you know, school people are all mandated reporters.
Right.
So superintendents around the state, from up north to down south to out west of the state, have told us repeatedly that they can't get the department oftentimes to respond when they report as a mandated reporter that the kid's in trouble. And so the superintendent in Calais said she's willing to go public, and she has. She says, we make calls. Sometimes it's days or weeks before they get back to us. And sometimes they don't get back to us at all. And what's hard for them is they know a kid's in danger, and they're doing all they can do. But do they send that kid home at night knowing that kid is going to get beat up again? Yeah. Or do they, what else can they do? They can't do anything else, so they let the child go home, of course. It's the only option they have. So if schools and mandated reporters, they're doing their half, but they're getting a blank phone on the other end. So that's to them, that's very, very frustrating. It's hard for them to deal with.
Yeah, the whole thing is so beyond the realm of reason. I don't know if this person got hold of you the other day or not, but they reached out to me. They work in the school system. They have called themselves, not even sending up the chain of command, called themselves on a couple of kids they had grave concerns about. They cannot get a return phone call.
Yeah, that's...
Janet Mills has 13,000 state employees. 13,000. You'd think if somebody called about a kid, and I mean, I can say this, if somebody called me about their kid And I can tell you, I do this. Yeah, you know this because I get hold of you.
Yeah.
I don't ignore it. I get hold of you immediately so you can go into action because I have no faith in these people. If somebody called the government and said, I believe there's a child in serious jeopardy, you would think they would drop everything and move heaven and earth to go try to save that child.
Absolutely.
They just don't care.
They just don't respond.
I know people will say, I have said before, I don't believe Janet doesn't care. I do believe she doesn't care now. Yeah. It's gone on too long. Yeah. She has been silent, and all she's done is defend the department.
That's right.
But the evidence is overwhelming that the department is incapable of doing its job under the current leadership.
Exactly. And that's what's so darn frustrating is that you present a case to them saying, look, this child needs protection, and if they don't get back to you, they don't have any kind of response at all, then you just feel so frustrated. And if you're a teacher or an administrator making that call, then that's something that is all of a sudden becomes part of you because you're seeing that child and you know what you're doing when you put them on the bus.
Can you imagine a teacher being in a school classroom and day after day seeing a child or maybe even two children and you know that there's a problem and finally you're at a point where, because you don't want to cause problems. Look, if you make an accusation against a family with regard to child neglect or abuse, that's a stain the family can't run from, even if it's not true. So they are reluctant. I understand that. But they're also mandatory reporters.
Right.
And so finally, you're at the point where you've said, I don't care. I'm calling the department, and the department won't get back to you. Can you imagine? And particularly, what if that child ends up dead? And yeah. That teacher has to live with it. They tried to do the right thing. And we don't even think like that in Maine. They don't think like Augusta is no. You know what Augusta is? Washington, D.C. is the most corrupt city in the world. Augusta is just a microcosm of that. No, they are so corrupt up there.
It's so. I mean, when Joe and you and I were there, and I don't want to sound like some old duffer, but at least we followed through with our constituents. And if somebody said to us back then, there's this kid in trouble, oh, my God, we would have moved.
Right.
We would have moved whatever we had to move to make it happen. I mean, I spoke to the commissioner, must have been 3 or 4 weeks now, and I said to her, why aren't you returning the calls? And the director spoke up because she was there, and she simply said, well, we get so many of those. We get more calls from schools than we do anywhere else. And we just try to discern whether or not it's a valid one.
Wow. So here's the thing.
Get back to them at least.
What does a private sector do when they're getting overwhelmed for calls? They redirect resources to answer the calls.
Exactly.
What do these people do? They make excuses and children die.
Yeah. And so they simply say, you know, well, we know most of those aren't really valid. I mean, how do you know that?
From a phone call.
I said, you know, you're getting the black
eye. They get the terror. You know what they do? Oh, this is bad. They get the terror cards out. And that's how they determine they feel it.
Well, I mean, and they're truly not, they're not taking it serious. So I said to her, why don't you just find somebody to answer the phone and get back to the person at least saying, we got your message and we're looking into it. They don't get anything. They don't get anything back, and that's
when Paula Page was governor. If you called 287-3531, the phone was answered, and she said the following: "Good afternoon or good morning, Governor LePage's office. How may I help you?"
Yeah.
Right now, you get push this, push that. I mean, they think that that's some nouveau riche, great way to do stuff. People call because they want to talk to somebody. If they don't want to talk to somebody, you know what they do? They text them.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so we've lost that. We've lost that touch. And it seems like. It seems like the legislature and the governor and the bureaucracy has become desensitized to kids dying. You know, when you say there's 23 kids died and 25 kids died in 23, 34 died in 21, 32 and 22. I mean, doesn't that mean something? And we've gotten so hardened to that.
No,
it's
means
a one day
nothing.
Story.
It means nothing. You know how we know? You know how we know? Because when the employees went after Bobby Johnson, their boss, and said, we have no confidence in you, Janet Mills and the one you like, Sarah Gagne Holmes, did nothing but stand up for her and didn't even address the complaints of the employees.
Right.
That's all they did because they don't care. Sarah may be a nice person, Joe.
Well,
she is a terrible commissioner.
So I knew her from, 12 years ago? Or 15 years ago, we served on Dirigo board together.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I knew that.
So, you know.
She may be a lovely person outside.
She may have changed.
She may have bought
into the bureaucracy.
They may be all lovely people at church and at the grocery store and at the PTA and the basketball game, but they suck at their job.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's just the bottom line. And the evidence is overwhelming. And when I say stuff like that, like, oh, my God, Ray, I can't believe you would talk like that. how many kids have to die before we realize they suck at their job?
Right. She was the only one, by the way, of all the bureaucrats we've dealt with, that at least admitted, on a meeting I had with her, admitted that, yes, we're getting black eyes, and we're going to have to try to do better, and what we're doing now is not working. So at least she acknowledged that. But you know what? Todd Landry said the same thing, but he didn't mean anything. So she is, at least she gave us a little flicker of hope that she's willing to accept. And I asked her about, there's a big bill coming in, I think Jeff Timberlake is doing it, regarding changing notification law, because right now, and confidentiality, and the confidentiality piece is what they hide behind a lot, saying we can't tell you anything about this kid because we can't even tell you if we dealt with them, if we visited the home at any time, because of confidentiality statute. So we need to change that.
Yep.
And so hopefully
that's the most precious part of it all. They hide their incompetence behind confidentiality.
Confidentiality.
And again, you know, the Legislative Oversight Committee, which sees classified information all the time.
All the time.
Not only did Janet stand up, Jeannie Lambro didn't do a dadgum thing, Janet backed her, and then the court. So we have no refuge here.
Right.
The court backed them.
Exactly.
So why are they the privileged few?
Yeah, you know, that court decision was really disappointing. And if you listen, if you read to one of the descendants of it, you would see that what he was saying is, well, you probably could have it, but it's bad timing in terms of how they brought it together. So I think I think the issue basically is that was a discouraging decision by the department, by the judiciary. And
you know who he sounds like? I don't know who the judge was, so maybe it was him. Sounds like Lance Walker.
Oh, yeah, no,
we sued Janet Mills on May 3rd. He responded on August 7th, and he said, well, you know, I have to respond based on the circumstances that exist today, not the ones when you file the lawsuit, and the oppression of businesses is largely over, which was completely untrue, and anybody can check the facts on August 7th. And then he told me that I needed Socratic wisdom, and so I did write him back, and Didi said to me, I hope you don't ever do anything that you have to stand before him. And I said, if I do, and he's harsh with me, I'm just going to say, well, it's retribution.
Mm-hmm.
This is what puny political people do.
Right.
I don't care for him, and I don't care that he knows.
Right.
People of Maine were harmed, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. Everybody saw the story. Must have killed the Press Herald to write the story.
Saw that.
Fourth graders.
Yeah.
They can't read. They can't do math. But hey, let's send them off to compete with the Japanese who are flourishing.
Right. And then you got Spurwink.
Damn fools is what they are.
Spurwink,
damn fools.
Spurwink had to sue the Department of Education because education would not allow them to have a child removed that was beating up himself, beating up other kids.
Right.
So they had to sue them. This is Spurwink, mind you, who's like this. I mean, they're really tight with the state, and they had to sue the department to say, look, you got to let us get rid of this kid. He's hurting other kids. And
well,
other
Bill,
teachers.
Let's not forget the federal government run by Joe Biden, who is...
I should be running it.
Yeah, you should be. Run by Joe Biden. It was a Democratic administration. Yeah. Democratic-led DOJ sued the state of Maine over not providing services to children who have special needs.
Exactly.
They sued them.
Right.
And so the state settled because, well, that was embarrassing.
Exactly. Well, don't forget...
And that got swept under the rug.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services sued the state as well.
Right.
Because they were given these psychotropic drugs to foster kids, overdosing them. Right. So that's two lawsuits. And then you had the inspector general came in and said, you know, you failed terribly. This year, our first report, 94% of the cases we've discovered you didn't do well on child safety and child neglect.
Right.
So, Bill,
I want to make this point to his and then go to you. So the part that was so precious for me is the inspector general came in. 94% of the time they failed. And, of course, that was all ignored, of course.
Right.
Then Trump fires some inspector generals and like,
yeah,
oh my God, their words are gold. These people, they shouldn't have been fired. But you didn't listen to them anyhow,
exactly,
state of Maine.
Exactly.
But you saw these people up there, crocodile tears. He fired him. He's such an evil man. Well, why didn't you listen to the inspector general when he's talking about the abuse of children in the state of Maine?
Yep, absolutely. And that's the double standard you see all the time.
Go ahead, Joe.
You're a former school superintendent.
Yep. In Raymond.
In Raymond. I know. I was on the school committee,
yeah,
I think.
Right.
So here's the deal. How many of, you know, we see these lower averages on school testing is due to the retirement of the older teachers. You know, people who are getting up there in age, and are now retiring, and you're bringing in, you know, a lot of young people. Someday they're going to be really good at what they do.
Right.
But how much of that, you know, contributes to these poor test scores?
Well, I think that does play a role. I mean, I think that some of those teachers left because they couldn't continue on under the new guidelines that are set out there. And I think the Commissioner of Education has made it clear what her guidelines are, and therefore the departments. And I think some of those teachers who are traditional teachers, who want structure in their classroom, and my wife was one of those. She was a fantastic third grade teacher, and she got so frustrated, and she blows up. She blew up this morning, spilling her hot chocolate when it came to the fact that, you know, we have kids who are this kid that was not allowed to leave that private school in Spurwink. So, I mean, teachers with those kind of values who demanded that kids behave, kids loved them for it, and they liked the structure, that is missing now, and I think teachers are getting out of it.
Yeah, and I don't blame them.
No.
I mean, if your hands are tied as to how you want to run a classroom, that is not a good thing.
No,
I think teachers, you know, when you're in that classroom, teachers should have the right to run that class how he or she wants to do it.
Exactly. Absolutely. And they know how to do it.
Right.
But when they passed this law a few years ago, you're not allowed to touch the child. So if the child's acting up, throwing chairs, all the other kids have to leave, and they let the kid do what he's going to do until hopefully
he calms down.
Yeah. So everything is bass-ackwards.
Yeah.
And so it's that drives good people away.
Well, think about the social workers that talked about the fact that the kids would be in the hotel and they were unsafe there, and they were still, forget the kids, because we know they don't give a damn about kids. We know that. But the caseworkers that work for the state, they didn't care about them either.
That's right.
And they're talking about that they were physically under threat from some of these children who were big children.
And that was the impetus for much of the no confidence vote in the director, because they were saying the kids are in danger, but so are we. You're making us work all day, go in there 4 to 8 hours at night, and some of these kids are big. And they get beat on.
So we talk about all the great employers in this state: Joe Bruno, Steve DeMillo, Sean Moody.
I got 215 of them.
You, Bill Diamond. And what do all
one of the few Democrats that actually runs a business?
What do all the great employers in Maine have in common? They care about the people that work for them.
You take care of your people.
Absolutely. They all have that thing. No matter what they do, no matter what their industry is, all the great employers have that in common. They care about their people. Would you say the employer of the state of Maine, Janet Mills, cares about her people when she allows them, after complaining in public, and really, which, if you think about what they did, having a no-confidence vote, what was there, 145 of them, they stuck their neck out, because you don't do that in government, because you're going to get your neck cut off, but they did it anyhow.
They did it.
How much jeopardy must they feel they were in to be able to do something like that? And for them to just ignore it and to praise Bobby Johnson? Are you kidding me? Janet Mills, I mean, we have a best employers group here in the state. Some people that are in the studio frequently are on it. Janet Mills should be the worst employer in the state.
Yeah, no, that was terrible. I mean, they totally ignored the employees that were saying, please help us.
I said to John Baldacci once when he was in the studio sitting where you are, Joe, I said, why do we need a state employees union, the MSEA? Why do we need that association? John, are you that terrible of an employer? And he smiled and said, no, I'm not. But it allows them to collect a bargain.
Right.
I now understand why you need the MSEA, because Janet is a terrible employer, and they need somebody to stand up for them.
And they wouldn't have spoken out the truth as they saw it if they didn't have some kind of protection for their jobs.
Right, of
Look,
course.
If you're the governor, it's like being the CEO of the company.
Right.
You hear about a problem. 145 is not a small number of employees. You would have personally gone and sat down with those people and say, tell me what's going on here. You know, you already met with your commissioner. So I, as the governor, am going to go down and listen to what they have to say. That's what the CEO would have done.
Yep,
but she just doesn't care.
No, it wipes it right away.
Right.
And the first and only priority was to defend the bureaucracy.
Bobby Johnson.
Yeah, commissioner.
Well, of course. But, yeah. I mean,
but Bobby was where it went.
She was the one that was under attack by 145 people who work under her.
Right. That took
and
courage.
Janet Mills' only response is to support her.
Right.
But the evidence that we're aware of is devastating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know why. It's like every legislator, even those who have been helping us, don't take advantage of these opportunities to say, see, we've got to change some things. Huh. And they haven't done that in the past. They didn't do it with the budget speech that she gave the other night, the State of the Budget, which was an odd title. So, I mean, it just seemed to me that if they're not going to speak up then, when will they speak up?
So you and I have sat through a lot of those speeches, Bill.
Yep.
Did it seem odd to you that there wasn't a whole lot of clapping in that speech?
I talked to Jane about that. We were saying, I said, you know, they usually have 15 or 20 times. And she paused a couple of times waiting
for the clapping, and there wasn't any.
It wasn't.
I mean, there are pause lines built into the speech.
Yeah.
But even the Democrats were in clap. Mm-hmm. I mean, they clapped more than the Republicans clapped twice, I think.
Right.
Cooper flag and the red flag law, maybe. Right. I don't remember. But, I mean...
It was noticeable.
To you, who have experienced it a lot, you know, realize that speech wasn't very good because no one's clapping for it.
And a lot of those obvious clapping points, something was gone wrong because they didn't applaud.
Right.
And that
speech writer was, missed out on a lot.
They usually prime the party in control by saying, you know, here's applause, 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 applause. So they do it anyway. These guys didn't.
Right.
That was quite noticeable.
It was, you know. And the news people didn't pick up on it at all.
No.
You know, not at all.
No, I'm not sure that they would have mentioned it if they did pick up on it.
Well, they wouldn't have moved. I mean, can you imagine the gnashing of teeth that went on in the Press Herald to write the headline that fourth graders in the state of Maine had the biggest drop of any fourth graders in the country in math and reading comprehension?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
They just don't do any reporting or investigation into the reporting. They just take it at face level. If the department puts out a press release, that's the story.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much what they wrote.
I mean, they could not ignore the story that came out about the dramatic drop of fourth graders in math and reading.
Right.
They couldn't ignore it.
Right.
There's no way, because it's a national thing. It's mandated by Congress. It evaluates all the states. There was no way they could ignore that. It's the only reason they covered it.
Yeah. They had no choice on that one.
They had no choice to cover it.
Yeah, we're waiting. We're kind of getting indicators that, you know, we've been kicking the department in the shins now for 2 years.
Right.
So. There's some signals there's probably going to be some retaliation coming even our way from time to time. And so we've been able to...
You will make sure people know about it if it happens, right?
Absolutely.
I don't know if you saw this or not, and it's not a big deal, but I had written a piece about you in 2019, and I had posted it on Facebook, and I'd forgotten about it because it's all the stuff I say about you anyhow. Somebody found it and reposted it yesterday, and... it's about the fact that you've been a warrior on this issue since 2001 and Logan Maher and all the work you've done. You've written a book about it. You've done everything you possibly can to bring awareness. And then you and your wife, Jane, put up $25,000 to start a foundation because the political angle wasn't working. So you needed to bring private sector, you know, pressure to them.
Right.
If they retaliate against you for trying to protect children, just what kind of monsters are there in our government?
It'll be
honestly
very,
monsters.
Oh, I know.
They're monsters.
If it continues on, it'll be subtle, and then it'll be another thing, but it'll be reflective of where it came from. So, haven't happened yet, but we're getting indicators that may happen.
So think about that. They are neglecting children. We're number one in the country in child neglect and abuse. In 2020, I think it was, we were double the national average.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're failing. And this is the worst part. Dee, what do you always say? Follow what?
Follow the money.
Follow the money.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely
reuniting children, vulnerable children, with monstrous parents. For what purpose, Bill? To get a 40% kicker?
Yeah, if they reach 40%, then they get a kicker back from the feds.
They get a kick back from the feds. So they are reuniting children and placing them in jeopardy to get a kickback from the federal government.
Right.
Joe, is it any wonder she's taxing prescriptions at 70% to go scam the federal government out of a bigger increase in their part? Is it any wonder she's scamming the federal government to get more money?
And like Bill, I think about retaliation, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is retaliatory.
Yep.
I'm really, you know, not surprised by it. But here's the thing. You're going to put that law on the books. It's effective April 26th. All right?
That's a weird day.
This tax.
Oh, you mean paid family leave?
No, the tax on prescriptions.
Oh, prescriptions.
Weird day. April 26th?
So you got to go through a state plan amendment. Would be my guess because you're going to be grabbing more money from the feds.
Right.
There's a chance the feds say, no, right? That tax is on the books. So everything you promised about, well, we're going to get more federal money and we're going to try and make you whole, if that the Fed's saying no, that tax is on the books, and now you're just giving them a bunch of money.
There you go.
But no one in that administration thought about that?
Well, no, like they didn't think about the paid family leave. They
right.
Even got that
I
got to
be honest with you. I hadn't thought about that angle. That but yeah. I do have friends in the administration.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can get the feds to say no. They don't always. They grant waivers a lot,
right.
But they don't always grant waivers.
Right.
I mean, this is a scam that Janet Mills is pulling as the governor of the state of Maine. And the only reason she can get away with it is because she's the elected official of the state of Maine. This is a scam on the people. Most of the people don't understand.
They don't even know it, do they?
Well, they don't understand the complex nature of by doing this, the feds pay a percentage. So if you raise the price, you get more reimbursement. This is bizarre stuff.
Yep.
And is it any wonder Washington's $36.5 trillion in debt and Augusta is funneling money as fast as they can to anybody they possibly can, and the results are terrible?
Yep. There's only one state that taxes prescriptions right now, but it allows you to pass it on to the consumer.
I thought it was Minnesota and Illinois.
Yes. Well, Minnesota has a different tax. Illinois is the one that actually taxes.
But Minnesota has a modified. Right,
but
yes.
This is a Minnesota idea, more than likely, on how to grab federal money.
Well, she and Timmy Walz are kindred spirits.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they're both
not
very smart.
He's the male version. She's the female version of the same person.
Right. The problem is this will probably pass because nobody knows about it.
Right.
It's like the paid family leave. Nobody knew about it. So
Where were Republicans all fall, everywhere, running ads, everywhere they possibly can, saying, do you know you're about to lose
that
more of the paycheck you've
earned? Some seats around.
Of course it would. They keep talking about, oh, my God, we worked so hard and how close we were. That might have changed those seats.
Well, you notice they didn't come out with the rules until after the election.
That was designed.
Yeah, but what
by design.
Here's
right.
what they did come out with. That the tax was starting January 1. That's what they did come out with.
Oh, yes.
Right.
And without rules completed and with no administrator.
Right.
There's no administration on this. So
it's
we have
just
know where
bizarre.
It's going. Yeah. I mean, I have 215 employees. Two-thirds of them are part-time. But everybody qualifies for this. So, like you said, Joe, we take care of our employees. Somebody has to go for 2 or 3 days to do whatever we cover for them. But 12 weeks...
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you,
Bill. You're getting really riled up.
So, Bill, you're an employer.
Yes.
So the AARP, they advocated for this bill.
Yep.
They were on this show many times advocating for this bill. And the AARP says that 166,000 people who work are probably going to take advantage of this. Now, I think the number is going to be higher, but that's what they say. That represents one quarter of the employees of the state.
Right. 50 of my people.
My God.
absolutely.
If I have pharmacists who take advantage of this, what am I going to do?
Right.
It's not like I just go hire a pharmacist off the street and say, "Oh, just fill in today."
Or you just can't go get the kid. Go get a kid off the street.
Right.
Here,
yeah.
You know, you guys watched "It's a Wonderful Life," right?
Yeah, of course.
So remember when Mr. Gower was filling a prescription and he put the wrong stuff in it?
Yes.
You go get somebody to know what they're doing, and they do the wrong thing. I mean, these people are lunatics.
Yeah.
And
what
we elect them to office.
Them.
What happens with physicians?
Yeah.
You're gonna just let them go? So what? No surgery for the next 12 weeks? I mean, seriously.
Well, you remember when she shut down everything, I had two friends whose doctors told them they needed immediate colonoscopies because of concerns, and they waited 4 months because of Janet Mills, the tyrant of Maine.
That could be a death sentence right there.
Of course it could.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's beyond ridiculous. But I think, frankly, I think the minority party needs to have some guidance. Because they missed some opportunities on a number of issues. And until they get their act together, they're always going to be in the middle.
It almost feels like the Republicans in Maine are in the same state as Democrats nationally.
Mm-hmm.
We're lost. We are lost.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I thought Trey Stewart's speech after the state of the budget speech, so to speak, was pretty harsh. I mean, to come out and just say, she's a liar.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what he came out and said. You know, that's pretty harsh, but that got lost in everything.
But that's the problem.
Yeah.
if that's the message he wanted to convey, then why didn't he come here, Matt's
right.
show,
right.
Rick and George, where people would have heard it? Nobody watched the dadgum
right. response.
No. I mean, I read the transcript. I don't watch that crap anymore.
No. Right. no
you got
no.
the schoolgirls up there clapping like seals and jumping right. up and down. You got the guys hooting and hollering. It's a disgrace.
Yeah no, that's right. It just ended. Everything ended right there. Therefore, yeah. it's a one-day story. Yeah.
Right.
So that's, right. yeah. no I don't doubt. Know. I'm not in a position to give advice.
So once again, I've gotten so enthralled with the conversation. We have blown through everything. So I'm just going to now keep rolling. Bill, you're welcome to stay.
Thank you, but I do have to get going.
Go. Well, yeah. we appreciate you being yeah. here.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate
But I'm glad
the
you're
Fridays.
Here. You know what? If we don't get fired up about this, nobody
yes.
else is.
Yes, and I hope the listeners will get fired up and call their legislator at least.
Well, they're wound up, and, but the problem is they don't know what to do.
No,
that's what
I
they
know.
Always tell me. They don't know,
I know
what to do.
Right.
And then if they, you know, I know Tim Daigle will never call you back, but if they happen to talk to the representative, they're like, well, I know Ray, and he gets really worked up, but you know, it's not as bad. I've right. had people tell me
yeah.
that. Well, you don't need to take this from Ray. Just look at the statistical evidence.
Look at the numbers.
For God's sakes.
I mean, kid, the child death and serious injury panel, and they're always cuddling up with the department. This yeah. year, their report came out, and it was actually quite good.
Accurate, you mean?
Accurate, yes. And they were saying how, of course, they called big mistakes. They called them missed opportunities.
Yeah.
But still, they were pretty good about saying, you know, this has got to change because
yeah.
it hasn't changed in a long time. So people are coming around slow but sure, but, boy, it's slow motion.
Yeah.
It's slow
yeah.
motion.
Yeah.
So
government moves very slowly.
Yeah, it does. It yeah. does.
But,
so.
But this is the one instance that I believe, regardless of your political stripes,
yes.
we could all rally around and demand immediate action, but they act like it's not happening.
They do. That's exactly what they act as. Yeah.
They
Absolutely.
Act like it's not happening.
Yes.
We got to move on to our yep. next guest.
Thank
Bill
you very
Diamond,
much.
Always great to
Bill,
see you.
Look
you
good.
Look very
much
sharp
thank
today.
Good to see you. Thanks, Ray. Thanks.
It is 8:36. This segment is brought to you by Standard ICF. Find out more at standardicf.net. It's Steve Robinson of The Main Wire. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Ray. How are you guys doing?
We're fabulous.
Good, Steve.
We're trying our best to make mischief here like you do. We're not as good at it, but we're trying.
Sounds like you guys had a similar reaction watching the state of the budget address earlier in the week.
Hey, Steve, I got to tell you, I love getting The Main Wire every morning. It really makes my day.
I appreciate you saying that.
You know, the honesty with which you report.
Well, we've got some exciting developments happening this year. We'll be mixing up our newsletter and adding some staff, so you can look forward to an expansion of what The Main Wire is doing, both in terms of our video content, our audio content, and continued news coverage of what's happening in Augusta.
Steve, I watched yesterday, and I don't know if it's an old video or not. I know you guys brought in a gentleman whose name escapes me about the decline of Maine schools, and you guys came and sat in studio with me and talked about it. But I'm sure you saw the report regarding how fourth graders have fallen educationally in reading and math. Reading and math comprehension and reading comprehension are the lowest in the country, and they've fallen dramatically. And everybody wants to say COVID. That's great. But all 50 states dealt with COVID, and we came out dead last.
Yeah, I mean, there's just one chart that says everything. There's a chart that shows since 2013 the increase in spending per pupil on public schools in Maine, and the other side shows the decline in reading and mathematics scores for eighth graders and fourth graders. And the more money we spend, the less we get for it. The more our kids' ability to read and do math declines. So whenever, you know, the frequent refrain we've heard from Augusta for 10 years, 20 years, probably 30 years, has been, there's not enough funding, there's not enough resources. Don't you know, Ray, that these teachers, they're spending money out of their own pockets for school supplies. We just need more money, more money, more money. And what we've seen is that the more money, more money, more money, has been gobbled up by administrators and social workers who are trying to, invoke social and emotional learning or do other far-left programming in these schools. We're teaching kids about every color on the Pride Progress flag and climate change, but they don't know how to read and they don't know how to do math. So So that's where the increased funding has gone.
So if you know if you know about every color in the Pride flag, but you can't read with comprehension and you can't do mathematics, are you prepared to compete in the world when you're 18?
Well, you're prepared to be a Democratic voter, but that's about it. and maybe that's what the project is all about. But the argument that we just need to be spending more money on our public school system has been blown out of the water by this. Because very clearly the problem is not money. Because this chart shows almost a one-to-one relationship. The more money we spend, the worse the students do. So anyone in Augusta, anyone in Maine, any school official who says this is a funding problem, show them the chart because they're wrong. That argument has been blown out of the water. It doesn't work. Instead, there needs to be some rethinking as to how we approach just being top to bottom, the entire system. I mean, this is crisis level stuff. We've got a whole generation of kids coming who aren't going to be able to read and do math. How are we gonna train people to be engineers in robotics factories if they can't do eighth grade level math or fourth grade level math? How are we gonna teach them to the Pender Macon, the Secretary of Education? She recently said that the ChatGPT and AI programming was going to revolutionize future workforce and education. Well, you're still going to be able to read, and you're still going to be able to communicate in the English language in order to interact with a large language model like ChatGPT. And the test results show that our kids increasingly can't do that. So if you're a parent and you can, I mean, Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, actually said this long before he was in conversation to be the defense secretary. He said, do whatever you can to get your kids out of the public school. Sell your furniture, sell your chairs, sell your book chairs, anything that's not nailed down, sell it and get your kids into private school. Because that's the best thing, it's the best gift you can give to your kids. And increasingly, that's looking like some very prescient wisdom. Because the public school system in this state is just a total, total failure. And to hear Governor Mills come out there last night and say, her big accomplishment, or I guess this was Tuesday night, she came out and said her big accomplishment was funding the education system at 55%. Well, what have we got to show for it? We've got kids that can't do math and kids that can't read. That's what we have to show for it.
Steve,
throwing money at a problem, it's not working, but that's right. All Janet Mills knows how to do is throw money at a problem.
Steve, how much money has gone to teacher salaries and benefits?
Oh, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but the teachers, I will say, it's not like they're being grossly overpaid.
Right.
I'm in favor of very well compensated teachers, but I think it has to be merit based.
Right.
I think that you have to pay, like I want good teachers to be paid very well, and I want bad teachers to be fired.
But yeah.
You can't do that right now because the Maine Education Association and the other smaller teachers unions in the state are some of the most powerful political forces in the state. And they helped get Governor Janet Mills elected, and they exist specifically to protect bad teachers.
Yep.
Because a bad teacher pays the same amount of union dues as a good teacher.
Right.
They don't care if you're a good teacher or a bad teacher. They just want more teachers because that means more dues and higher salaries for the union bosses. So they're going to protect everybody. So they're the reason why we can't have merit-based pay. If you had a really, really good all-star math teacher whose students consistently performed above average and were getting into college, I'd be fine with them making $1 million a year. Like, I think that teachers should be all-stars. Really, really good teachers should be really, really well compensated. That's the merit-based system that I would envision, where people are falling over themselves to get their kids into the best teachers programs. But we don't have that. Instead, we have this Harrison Bergeron BS where everything has to be equitable and everything has to be level. And you have to get rid of your gifted and talented programs so that you can cater to the bottom quintile of society. And I think another thing that has to be said about these results in particular, the huge amount of money that's being spent, is that a lot of this is teaching basic English language to non-citizens who the state has welcomed here with open arms because left-wing politicians think that Maine is a vehicle to ameliorate social inequality globally. Like, they view Maine as an international welfare project where we can eradicate all of poverty in Haiti and South America and Africa when we can't even take care of people in Anson and Garland and Greenbush.
Yeah, it's beyond the pale of any reasoned mind is what it is. You know, I was thinking about it as you were speaking, and we've been watching a lot of documentaries recently on the American Revolution and George Washington. You know, if they had operated under the standards that are applied by the main educational system, we would all still be British. These people had to really achieve in order to defeat the greatest army in the history of the world at that moment. They had to really become something greater than what they thought they were capable of, because these were a ragtag group of a few professional soldiers, frontiersmen, and farmers, and yet they did it. But if the standard that the main education system has set, which is mediocrity, so nobody's better than anybody else, we would all still be British. You'd be speaking with a British accent right now.
Well, I might be speaking with a German accent, technically. If you
well, that could also be true. That could also be true.
But you know, I think what we have yet to see really is any kind of breaking of ranks within the education blob itself. And at some point, there have to be teachers and superintendents who really start to live out this mantra of putting kids first and taking care of kids. Because right now, this is not a system that does that. This is a system that puts the teachers first and the administrators first. This is a system that worries about their salaries and their benefits.
Joe brought up salaries. And I know this only because I've been looking at this a lot. Maine teachers still fall in the bottom 10 of the country for pay, for compensation. So all this money Janet Mills has poured in and all the accolades she gets for her timely investments into education is not trickling down to the teachers. So just what is the union fighting for? There's all this additional hundreds of millions of dollars, and yet the teachers aren't even seeing it. The good teachers certainly aren't, and even the mediocre ones aren't. So it's going to administrative bureaucracy, because Pender Macon's idea of education is social emotional learning, not math, science, reading and writing, and arithmetic.
Well, yes, it goes to the administrators, it goes to the guidance counselors, it goes to the ever increasing body of
social reengineering people. That's what it goes to.
Yeah, I mean, they're professional staff at schools, but they're not teachers and they're not principals. That's where it's going to. It's administrative bloat. And then there's also this entire body of contractors who kind of exist in the education world, and they get put on retainer. They're like DEI consultants or social emotional learning consultants. There's various left-wing services that they perform, and they hook into each school district for a retainer of, say, $10,000 or $15,000 a month. And, you know, you put enough of those school districts together, you get 15 grand here, 15 grand there each month. Pretty soon you've got a nice little salary that you can live on.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of bloat and needless expense going on in these school districts. But again, all you have to do is look at the chart. We've posted it everywhere at the Maine Wire. I'm sure the Policy Institute has posted it. The Republican caucuses, I'm sure they'll be posting it everywhere. The amount of money per pupil we're spending is almost exponential upward, and the results are downward.
Yeah.
And that chart, in any business you're in any field you're in, if you look at that chart, it tells you that whatever you're doing is wrong. And yet what you heard the governor say on Tuesday in her speech, and the only thing that you've heard from Democratic lawmakers, is that let's keep doing the same thing. Let's keep shoveling money at these school districts and just hope that we get better results.
Yeah,
the definition of insanity. Something radical needs to happen, or we're going to lose an entire generation of kids.
I couldn't agree with you more. And we've seen the dramatic drop of school age population, 247 in 1977, which is our peak. And today we're below 170. I want to ask you and Joe Bruno a question. We're talking with Steve Robinson of the Maine Wire. This segment is sponsored by Standard ICF. Find out more at standardicf.net. So, gentlemen, as you know, President Trump, along with Sam Altman, Larry Ellison, and Masha, announced $500 billion investment into AI, and they're going to build big data centers down in Texas. So Larry Ellison is acknowledged as one of the great businessmen of our country. If you're Larry Ellison and you're looking at the great 50 states and you're going around and looking at where could some of these things happen, where could we go in and do this in a way where we're getting precisely what we need, but maybe we're able to save a little bit. So you're looking at Texas, you're looking at Tennessee, you're looking at Florida.
Maybe you've been looking at New Hampshire because of their infrastructure. If you come to Maine on the chart and you look at second highest and maybe highest after this budget, tax burden in the country, infrastructure at 49, business climate at 47, education system falling from math and science being number one in 92 to being 43rd overall with your high schools in dead last, and now this report comes out. If you're Larry Ellison, do you look at Maine as a place of opportunity that he might consider?
Well, honestly, I don't even think that you get to taxes. I think you stop right at electricity.
Right.
Because all of these new developments.
Yeah, I didn't even mention electricity.
The data centers are so, the amount of electricity that they use is considerable. And Maine's, you do just take an Excel spreadsheet and sort by, cents per kilowatt hour. Mm-hmm. Maine drops down to the bottom.
Right.
Because for 6 years, more, longer than that, we've chased these silly wind turbines that make crony capitalists rich. We've chased solar panels that make crony capitalists rich. They're not saving a single bird or a whale. They're not lowering the temperature of the climate. They're not preventing any carbon from going into the atmosphere. That's nuclear technology, if that's what you actually want to do. Instead, we're stealing money from taxpayers and ratepayers to make friends of politicians wealthy, and it makes electricity super, super expensive. So Maine is non-competitive when it comes to anything that's going to be consuming huge amounts of electricity, and that includes data centers. So Maine's not even in the conversation. And then we haven't even gotten to taxes yet.
Right.
The electrical policy of this state, the energy policy, which is foundational to everything we would want to do in terms of our economy, just throws us out the window. We're going to be a place where you can come and lick an ice cream cone and get a $45 lobster roll,
right,
and that's about it. And then the interior of the state will be one great big vast wilderness wasteland where it looks like there was a zombie apocalypse because people can't even afford to fix up the siding on their trailers.
Yeah, it's crazy. Absolutely. I want to ask Joe Bruno a question. Joe, let me ask you this question. We all saw that announcement with the president and Masha and Sam Altman and Larry Ellison. It was a big announcement. It was a big announcement that our country was going to take a gigantic leap forward in this arena. Do you think the governor of the state of Maine, Janet Mills, picked up the phone and tried to call one of those gentlemen and said, we would like to attract you here. Tell me what I need to do.
Well, let's face it. Janet Mills is not connected in that group. She's not even close. You know, when she calls a businessman, they probably laugh, first of all, and go, who are you? So I doubt that they did. We still have problems with cell phones in this state. How many times you're driving down the Maine Turnpike and you drop a call? So if we can't even solve that, do you think we're going to have the technology and the infrastructure to be able to build one of these huge data centers here? There's no way. Yeah. There's no way. So, Steve, I got a question for you.
What's up?
It's a headline in the Press Herald, which we know is right down the middle. Governor Mills uses budget address to call for compromise by lawmakers in both parties. Did you hear that the other night at all?
I mean, that's funny. It's the Soros Trust. I'm surprised they're still managing to turn out a paper. They're laying off just about everybody.
Well, their CEO just resigned. What? And she was making $370,000 a year.
Oh, the CEO of the National Trust has resigned. The publisher of the Press Herald has resigned.
Right.
The longtime editors resigned. They don't have their sports columnists. They don't have the. I mean, they even lost their vegan restaurant reviewer.
Oh my God!
The times are tough at the Press Herald. we're counting down the number of papers that they'll actually be able to produce. But no, I did not hear compromise there. What I heard instead was a governor pretending to walk the middle line with some very, very poor speech writers preparing her. At the same time that she was mouthing these words about, well, the left wants this and the right wants this, but this is the middle path I've cut. The most telling issue, or I guess the most telling line from her speech was when she was defending her tobacco tax, which, bear in mind, when she proposed the tobacco tax as a way to plug the hole in her overspending plan, she never once said that it was about public health. Instead, it was about robbing money from poor cigarette smokers to plug a hole in a budget that she created. And then when myself and Ray and people on other radio shows started criticizing her for leveling a tax on poor people, that's when all of a sudden, after the fact, she invented this public health rationale. And in the middle of her speech, she goes after Republicans saying, I guess you just want to make it really, really cheap for people to smoke, and then you want to cut their health care. So to be clear, this bipartisan, moderate, compromise governor was accusing Republicans of wanting poor people to die from lung cancer.
Right.
So that's the moderate, compromise governor, accusing her opponents of wanting poor people to die from lung cancer because they merely pointed out that her taxation policy was regressive and would be primarily paid by poor people.
Right.
That's the kind of friendly, moderate compromiser we have in the Blaine House.
And
this is the last budget document that she'll have any fingerprints on. She's going to be a lame duck at this point, thank God.
Yeah.
There's some other stuff that the legislature is going to do, but we get the supplemental budget out of the way, and then the next 2-year spending plan. And then all eyes turn to 2026, and we got to find, some gubernatorial candidate who has a very, very strong back and a sharp shovel to bury us under, dig us out from under this heap of crap that we're under.
Mm. So she's very proud that we have 400,000 people on Maincare in the state. 30% of our population is on Maincare. And she's proud of that fact. I mean,
that's a good point, Joe.
I mean, what that tells me is we're a poor state, first of all, and we have a lot of people who are getting government supplements for what? For what reason? Why?
And that was another contradiction. I mean, this was a speech filled with contradictions. The one thing that you heard at the beginning, we're growing. Our economy's growing. We're growing faster than New York, California. Business is booming. The unemployment rate is low. Things are so good. We just got gold flowing out of the hills. Things are so good underneath Governor Mills. Wow, what a great economy. We should all be grateful for it. Oh, by the way, we have 400,000 people, half the state, on Medicaid.
Yeah.
They act like Medicaid is just some gold-plated health care plan. The level of benefits you get as a person who is on Medicaid, that might be the case, but it's a welfare program. Medicaid is a welfare program. It is food stamps for the emergency department, food stamps for the doctor's office. Well, Medicaid is a welfare program. It's taxpayer funded. It does not reimburse healthcare providers at adequate rates. So the more people you have on Medicaid, the less well off your healthcare providers are, the less well compensated your healthcare providers are. And because your healthcare providers aren't compensated at an adequate rate for the services they provide to those 400,000 Medicaid patients, they have to jack up costs on privately insured people. So it's not just the taxes that come out of your paycheck that go to pay for Medicaid benefits. It's also the higher cost you pay for healthcare benefits that subsidizes the Medicaid population. So this huge Medicaid population for her to brag about, it's insane. It's like she's bragging about the level of poverty in the state and government dependence in this state. It's a very, very bad sign.
Well, what else is she going to do, Steve? What else is she going to do? We have more people in poverty today than we did when Janet Mills took office. She has to brag about it because it's the only thing you can do is call it an accomplishment so you can confuse people.
Well, let's not forget, she wants a socialist state. You know, she wants health care for all. I mean,
I don't even think it's that advanced. I don't think that she has a political philosophy that's coherent enough to be called socialism or collectivism or anything. I think it's just surviving day by day. I think it's like Polemarchus from Plato's Republic. It's doing good to your friends, doing bad to your enemies. Mm, that's as simple as it is.
Right.
She wants to help her friends and hurt her enemies, and it's politics as like a boxing match.
Right. So she doesn't have foresight to look ahead and say, this is what my goal really is. She just
every day she wakes up and thinks, how can I screw over my enemies and how can I help my friends, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
It's astonishing, really. It just is. Hey, we appreciate you being on. Thank you so much. We always look forward to conversations with you on Friday. We've got to run. I blew through the bottom of the hour, so.
Yeah, but people are being educated.
Well, I know. Steve Robinson of the Maine Wire, we appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Of course. Thanks,
Steve.
Guys.
Bye.
And you guys can find out more at themainwire.com. The segment was brought to you by Standard ICF. Find out more at standardicf.net.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
At Community Pharmacy, we can provide all your durable medical equipment needs. We can also provide all your incontinence needs as well as your hospice care needs discreetly and delivered right to your door. Go to communityrx.com to find out more.
I'm Bill Diamond, founder of Walk a Mile in Their Shoes.
The Maine Department of Health and Human Services has been sued twice for its failures and mistreatment of children in foster care. The department was found non-compliant